Kamala Mukunda, who has been working at the Center for Learning, which is a teacher-run school. And she has also a 27-year experience. So she's talking with a long experience. The school is based on the educational philosophy of a late Chidu Krishnamurti. Kamala has a PhD in educational psychology. And her topic today is peacetime education. So welcome, Kamala. You are on a mute.
Yes. Thank you so much, Heidi and Gabita, for this opportunity to share. And also, I want to just appreciate Ernest and Meme and Moleboing. Very, very interesting. And I almost had tears listening because this has been a time where the whole world has shared the same misery. Maybe for the first time, it's felt like that. Like we have all had the same feelings at the same time. It's been really something. What I wanted to share is a little different, perhaps. It's something that I thought to call peacetime education. It's about the kind of education that I've been involved in for 27 years. And if I want to use the word emergency, I would say it's education between emergencies. The topic of today's seminar is, of course, education for emergencies. And I think there are different levels at which we're exploring it today. The grounded reality of the most recent global emergency, and all my three co-panelists spoke very nicely about that. And then the true nature of learning and teaching, which I think all of us have learned something deeper about that through this, through something having been taken away from us. I feel we've learned something about the true nature of learning and teaching. And finally, which is what I'll focus on, the purpose of education itself and what is the connection between education and these emergencies, in quotes. So just to go through these three briefly one by one, the grounded reality, which Ernest and Meme and Moleboing explained, the trials and tribulations of students and teachers forced to conduct education online, it seemed to link us all together in a common misery. We also felt it. And so much has been learned about how to make the learning experience a little better when we face such a disruptive situation again. And secondly, what is this learning and teaching? What does it truly consist of? I feel that, you know, when COVID restrictions lifted in India and we were all able to bring our students back to campus, their learning really suddenly accelerated. And we realized that teaching and learning with physical presence enhanced our education immensely, even compared to the best online and self-study models that we came up with. And we did. We tried to be as creative as we could, but still having that face-to-face class was much better. And we actually don't see any way to make up for the lack of physical presence. And personally, if the need arose again, I wish the whole world would agree to press the pause button so that children and young people don't have to compromise the quality of their learning just because the clock won't stop. Ernest mentioned that graduation was later. I mean, that does sound like it would have been stressful for your students in Ghana, but I often found myself wishing that the whole world would agree to just stop for 1 year and then restart, because everyone was kind of in a race to continue in spite of all the difficulties, right? Okay, now I'll talk about the main thing, that is this purpose of education and its connection with what we're calling emergencies. I would request you to join me for a few minutes to reflect on this question. What happens to us as educators, as teachers, in between emergencies? Are we not in a kind of sleep, kind of a stupor that we awaken from only if some big crisis erupts, and that too in our faces? What COVID revealed to us in India, you know, in India, the suffering of thousands of people suddenly became visible to middle-class urban people like me. In fact, as Heidi mentioned right in the beginning, the emergency has been ongoing. The difficulties faced by so many people in India has been going on, but not visible to us or conveniently ignored by people like us. It was painful to realize that so many children were falling behind in their learning goals during COVID, for many of the same reasons that Ernest and Maymay were mentioning. But the truth is that these goals were actually not being met even before COVID. For the vast majority of children in India, this is the case. And very sadly, back to normal, so-called back to normal after COVID, is really not going to change much for the better for most people in India. This is something that stayed with me, this fact. And I felt that as a species, you know, human beings, we are good at responding to disaster, relatively good, better than I think daily life. When we're faced with disaster, some good things happened. Yeah, even during COVID months on several fronts, medical miracles, really, government, some of them at least performed well. Education rose to meet the challenge, I feel. We gathered our energies and we met the emergency as best as we could. In some cases, we came together cooperatively. But an emergency should urge us to relook deeper than just the needs of that emergency. And we may realize that this emergency has not arisen from out of the blue. You know, unlike an asteroid hitting Earth, which would be one kind of emergency, or our sun going nova, you know, most of the challenges that we are facing worldwide today are directly or indirectly the result of humans' narrow and short-sighted vision. It's our tendency to look at the world in terms of me and the other, us and them. I'll say a little bit more about this because this is what our education is related to. See, in myself, this me and the other, the separative way of thinking and living is very apparent. But I may not see the danger of these in my own life, except maybe in the crises of my own personal relationships, perhaps my relationship with my daughter or my husband or my friend. But just think, multiply this, what happens in my head by 8 billion people, day after day, each of us striving to secure our identity, secure our place in the world, secure our attachments. What kind of a world are we going to create? This brings me to a very interesting mathematical theory, actually, called catastrophe theory. I'm not going to get into the mathematics, don't worry. It's just as a metaphor for this emergency idea. It's a nice concept that explains how a bridge collapses. See, as the load on the bridge increases in a continuous way, the bridge deforms gradually in a continuous way until a critical point is reached and then it collapses. Okay? It doesn't collapse out of the blue. And this is the way I see emergencies. Emergencies come at the end of a period of incoherence and disorder, during which time we don't seem to do much about everyday disorder. And one day, it's war, or it's pandemic, or it's floods, and the bridge has collapsed. So what is the purpose of education then, if we see that emergencies do not actually appear out of the blue? They are being nurtured. Emergencies are nurtured in our human psyche and in our human action and the things that we do day after day, year after year, decade after decade. The school where I work was founded on this principle that the heart of social and psychological and economic crises is to be found in our own human nature. Without a deeper understanding of the human psyche, we feel that any attempts to fix the outer world will be limited. I mean, they are amazing, they're laudable, they're awesome attempts to fix the outer world. I don't want to deny that in any way. But I feel these attempts are limited to the extent that we haven't understood the way the human mind works. This insight into the human psyche comes easily when one directly observes one's own thoughts and actions and motivations. This must have happened to all of us. One sees these divisive movements in oneself. The questions that I'd like to share with you. These questions are at the heart of my school, the school where I've worked, as Heidi said, for 27 years. One is, can we together, students and teachers, explore different ways of living and relating? Bringing in compassion and love. Can we learn about our psychological movements, the movements of fear, insecurity, and desire in the context of our daily life and relationship? And can this exploration be a joyous one? It is not to condemn ourselves, not to judge ourselves, but to observe and to understand. And through that, responsibility and care might flow easily and unforced. See, without this understanding, I just want to share that most schools have to induce all these things top down, you know, through fear and through rules and through enforcement. But there is a bottom-up way of doing it, which is what our exploration is, through understanding, both teacher and student, together. Care and responsibility, to me, are powerful orientations to the world. I'm not able to see my own, the text of, yeah. It's precisely the lack of care and responsibility in peacetime that leads to the emergencies that upturn our lives and create global suffering. As I said, it's not direct. The lines are not directly drawn, but indirectly, this is what's happening. It is the lack of insight into human nature, which is always observable in oneself, actually, that leads to emergencies. And all of this can be explored in schooling if we only do one thing: shift the focus of education from fitting into society, shift it to regenerating society. Now, you might ask, is there a tool for this exploration? How do you explore the human psyche with children and teachers together in a school environment? Well, there is only attention, actually. It's the simple awareness of what's happening both within us and outside. It is not a matter of creating complex courses and readings. And it is actually moment-to-moment attention. The word that has become a buzzword nowadays is mindfulness. I used to like that word before. Now it's become a bit of an overused word. But yeah, maybe it is mindfulness. This gives us a pause for intelligence to operate. By intelligence, I don't mean IQ or intellect. I mean more like a wisdom, the intelligence that each of us has within us. Awareness can be engaged at any time, in daily life, in dialogue with another, in any environment. It is not restricted. I have to be sitting under a tree to be aware and attentive. It can happen when I am in the heat, midst of a heated argument with my colleague. Awareness can come in. It's difficult, but it can. It is easier said than done, yes. The world pushes us away from simply being in the present attentive. I find today the world is increasingly valuing noise and speed, and it fears being alone, aloneness. I won't call it loneliness. I would say aloneness is something very different, and it is not bad, actually. At our school, we are moving in the opposite direction. We are pursuing things like silence, slowness, and solitude. All this may make you think that we're running a monastery and not a school. Let me assure you, there's a lot of noise and fun and laughter in our school. But there is something about silence, slowness, and solitude that can be explored even with young, happy, energetic children. So, in short, the research that I have to share is that such an education can be sustained and remains relevant in changing times. Our school's philosophy and practice come with a lot of challenges. There is nothing easy about working with consciousness. I would love to share at some later time with anybody who's interested what our challenges are and have been. We've been doing this work for 32 years now. I've been here for 27. And although I do not know what tomorrow will bring, the questions at the heart of our endeavor will always be relevant and important for the world. As Heidi said, our educational philosophy is inspired by the writings of a philosopher, J. Krishnamurti. He died several years ago. He started several schools in India, one in the UK and one in the US also. If you were to visit our school, if I may take just a few minutes to share some details of the school with you. This is our school, the roofs in the distance that you see. You won't experience some of the traditional features of schooling. You will not see fear, authority, comparison, competition, exams, and narrow curricular focuses. We feel strongly that these features are creating apathy, self-centeredness, and narrow-mindedness in the world, which eventually lead to the emergencies that wake us up. So these are actually the things that by cutting them out, we hope the children will grow up very differently. The core of our work is relating with affection and engaging in dialogue. So you would see a lot of sitting together and talking. People would be sitting together and talking. And you would, of course, see students and teachers working together in a wide range of activities, cooking, cleaning, working on the land, studying, playing, singing, dancing, working with their hands, going on walks, learning about the natural world. I want to say here, I really appreciate that in Finland, teacher education is looking to other countries for ideas. You are the state educational model that all of us admire. It's very nice that you're reaching out to others to look for ideas. I feel many resonances in the Finnish state models to what we do at our school. I think two important differences that I see is we are outside the mainstream in our country. We are a private small school, and most school education in our country is not like this. And that's very sad, whereas you in Finland have that sorted out. And I think our core philosophy that I've described here very briefly today seems to be a difference, perhaps. I'm happy to enter into discussion about this. Thank you.